Well, Jermaine, you can stop the call.
Hey, this is Eric Stewart. Is everybody here?
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks. Who's this?
Good, good, good. Glad that you got on. So, you know, you can begin anytime you want. For those of you today, we on the call, we do have a special guest joining the call. We have Eric Stewart from Atlantic Business Capital. Many of you already know who Eric is from the Multifamily Millions Boot Camps, and some of you have actually had the privilege of speaking to Eric on the phone. And just to let you know, some of you will actually get to know Eric even more because he is part of our certification program. So you'll be seeing him on those videos once you receive them in the next couple of weeks. But today, Eric is just here to talk to us about lending and answer any of your questions that you may have about the lending process and what you need to do to secure a loan for your real estate business. So if you want to ask Eric a question, all you need to do is just press pound zero, and then the operator will take your question. So do we have an operator today?
It's actually star zero.
You do? This
I'm sorry, star
it's
zero.
It's actually star zero. Yes, star zero, just press it once, and that will enter you in the queue.
Thank you very much, operator. So, Eric, we thank you for joining the call with us today. I know it was last minute, but we really appreciate it. And the floor is all yours.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that and the healthy intro there. I think today we've connected with a lot of folks just about lending in general and you know where the debt markets are. I think today Jeannie and I had talked about covering a little bit, getting a little bit more specific and talking about the sponsorship aspect of it. Sometimes there's a lot of gray area in regards to what a sponsor is, you know, what role they play in the deal, what kind of compensation they typically get, what a lender looks for. There's a lot of different aspects to it, and kind of I think the segment's normally called Grill Jeannie, Grill Jeff, and so I think the questions are going to be what's most important, so that we make sure that we address those items, but I can kind of do a high-level skeletal structure of it, and then maybe that'll, you know, spark some questions, some follow-up questions, and we can kind of take it from there. So I won't spend a lot of time just you know, talking about the structure, but I will go over some general items and then try and spur some questions, and we can kind of take it from there. So what the notes that I took that I wanted to cover and at least start off with were qualifications of the sponsor, you know, what lenders are going to look for, the sponsor's role in the company that a lender sees relative to what a lot of our borrowers look for from their sponsors, but what the lender's viewpoint is. I do want to touch on carve-outs and a couple different meanings of what a carve-out is. And then, obviously, you know, hopefully those items will lead to some questions. We can kind of take it there and address what everybody else wants to hear. You know, first I think the majority of my clients anyway, and I think most of the folks on the call, are looking for non-recourse debt. Right, they're looking for a loan structure that does not require a personal guarantee for a couple different reasons. One, they don't want to put their personal assets on the line, and two, they don't want or they don't necessarily want to have to qualify a loan based on their trailing couple years of income. You know, they want to look for a lender that's going to look at the income of the property. And the question comes up, why do I need a sponsor if this is a non-recourse loan, it's not a personal guarantee, so what difference does it make? And I think it's important to note that sponsorship qualifications are kind of a quality gate, if you will. Even though they're not looking for a personal guarantee from the sponsors, even though they're not looking at the sponsors' income to service the debt, they do want to know that there is a certain level of quality in there that's signing on their carve-outs, which we'll talk about in a bit, and running the asset. You can imagine if you were investing in a company, you would want to know who's in there making the decisions, and that's exactly where the lender's head is. I mean, they have investors just like you do. Everybody on the call or most of you on the call are going to go out and you're going to raise equity, like what they talk about at the multi-million boot camps, what they talk about at the private money boot camps. You go out and you raise money, raise capital for your equity injection. So you have investors, and your lenders have investors as well. And they have to answer to those investors about the quality of their product and what they're putting in there. So that's why they look for these things. They want to maintain a certain level of quality. Now, there are certain triggers. And sponsorship requirements do vary depending on who the lender is. You know, you've got agency lenders, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who have their specific guidelines. You've got conduit lenders, CMBS lenders, that have a little bit more lenient structures in some areas, but they raise their requirements in others. When you get into your portfolio lenders and the private client groups that are putting money out there, they even take it a step further as far as their borrower requirements, experience, liquidity, things like that. But there are three common threads to these lender requirements and what lenders look at. And the three common characteristics are that they look at your net worth, they look at your post-closing liquidity, right? So money that's available to you, where you have access to after the loan closes, and then they look at what type of experience you have. So it's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be the specific number of units that you're buying in the same market for a certain amount of time. If you have some type of make sense, you have some type of, did I happen to hit something, guys, or operator, can you hear me okay?
I want to make sure that
I didn't just mute my phone. You can hear me fine? Okay, good. I got a note that it was muted, so I thought I may have inadvertently hit the mute button. But getting back to the characteristics, the experience side of things can be a little bit gray because it's more about making sense for the asset than it is specific guidelines. Now, if you're doing a small balance loan, meaning a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan that's in their small balance category, less than $5 million or $6 million, then they do have some specific location requirements if you want to self-manage. But third-party management really, really helps a lot, and it really, really goes a long way. They do like to see some experience in the market, but when you have third-party management in place, we can get a lot done. So covering these three characteristics, one, when they look at your net worth, they want to see that your net worth is greater than the loan amount you're asking for. Now, this is pretty much universal in the lending community. Until you get up to, say, $15 million loan amount or more, $20 million or more, that's when they start to relax that a little bit because not everybody's walking around with $15 or $20 million worth. So at that point, it's more about making sense. Liquidity. Now, certain lenders have, the small balance lenders have their own guidelines. It can range from anywhere from 9 months worth of debt service to a year's worth of debt service. That's on paper. Those are minimum liquidity requirements. What they really like to see is approximately 10% of the requested loan amount. That's not necessarily a minimum guideline, but that is where your liquidity becomes a mitigating factor in the deal. It becomes a positive in the deal that may be able to offset some other weaknesses. So let's say that the occupancy isn't where it needs to be. Let's say the collections are a little rough. The lender's going to look at the deal and say, yeah, well, we have some solid liquidity, or there's some deferred maintenance in place. But that liquidity or that solid net worth really helps, crutch that deal along so we can still move forward. So the 10% line is where it really becomes a mitigating factor. But the minimum we have to come in is at least 9 months to a year's worth of mortgage payments. You really don't want to be below that. And then, as I said, experience, when you're implementing third-party management, we really like to show that you've got some level of experience in that market or having absentee ownership in general. That's That combined with third-party management and solid financials is typically enough to get that deal done. If you are looking to self-manage, they're going to be a little bit more strict with it, but in general, that's what they look for. Now, these are the small balance programs. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac small balance programs are probably the most strict when it comes to that. So, you know, your CMBS lenders or your larger balance lenders, they probably have a little bit more leniency where they can hang on to the third-party management a little bit more. So those are some exceptions to that rule. You know, your small balance loans, which, again, small balance programs start for Fannie Mae, it's 1 to $5 million. And for Freddie Mac, it's 1 to $6 million nationwide. And then in certain top markets, they'll go up to $7.5 million. They'll also make some exceptions to raise that in their standard markets up to $7.5 million as well. As I said, for your DUS lenders, your Fannie Mae DUS loans, or your CMBS loans, there is a high probability that we can get some waivers or some exceptions for a healthy looking deal. For strong financials, we can always request a waiver on possibly some light experience or something along those lines. So there is a little bit more flexibility there because, again, you don't necessarily see a net worth equal to that $20 million loan amount, that type of thing. Also keep in mind, and this is kind of an important side note because I'm seeing a lot of folks get into specialty tenant bases lately, whereas, you know, your market rate deals that meet, you know, Dave's requirements are the trinity here. They can be tough to find, especially in a hot market like we're in. And I see a lot of folks moving into specialty tenant base, namely student housing, also, you know, senior and that type of thing. But student housing seems pretty popular. And it's important to note that in addition to your third-party management company having student housing experience, Fannie Mae really, really likes to see that their owners have student housing experience as well. So we definitely want to keep that in mind. If you're looking to get in there and you're looking to bring on a sponsor onto your team, you're buying a student housing property, you really want to vet that out and talk about what type of student housing experience they have. Now we can, and we've done this in the past, depending on the student concentration, we may be able to get the deal done with, if let's say it's less than 80% student, we would call that a partial student property, and we can get in without previous student experience. But if you have more than 80% student in that property, then we're going to have to present some previous student housing experience. So in that scenario, we may work with a CMBS lender or something like that. So there's always options, but it's just good to know what type of loan you're going to qualify for. So, you know, keep that one in mind as you go through and you're shopping for properties. The next thing is to talk about is what triggers a sponsor, what triggers sponsorship in general. Who's going to have to sign on the loan and who doesn't? I get the question a lot of times about investors and, you know, members of your LLC, limited partners of your partnership. And just the folks that are putting in money but do not have a controlling interest in the deal, if they're going to have to sign on the loan. And the answer to that question is really below a 25% ownership threshold. If an individual does not have a manager's position or a controlling position in that LLC, they should not have to sign on that loan. Now, this isn't owner-occupied business loans. This isn't SBA lending or anything like that. This is investment. This is an investment debt structure for a non-owner-occupied property. And in that scenario, the ownership threshold is 25%. Or no matter what your ownership percentage is, you could own 1%. If you're a manager and named as a manager of that manager-managed LLC, then that lender is going to want to underwrite you. So it really comes down to your corporate title and your ownership threshold. As long as it's below 25%, you should not have to be underwritten. Now, keep in mind, we've done this a number of times, even if your ownership percentage is greater than 25%, if you don't have a controlling position, let's say you're a member and you own 30%, then you very well may not have to sign on the loan. They're just going to have to underwrite you. They're going to have to at least, at a minimum, do a credit search and do an OFAC search and essentially just run you through the whole Patriot Act disclosure and discovery, because they are going to have to look and make sure that we're not laundering money, make sure that we're not harboring terrorist funds, things of that nature. So they do look for that if you're over that 25% threshold. But on the other side of the coin, the net worth, the liquidity, and the experience only count for those individuals that are signing on the loan, that are sponsoring the loan. So keep that in mind as well. It goes both ways. If an individual does not have to sign on the loan, but they're worth $10 million, that $10 million is not going to be recognized as qualified net worth, right? Only the individuals that are signing on the loan. Another terminology for that is the person signing on the carve-outs. Going back to what we said originally, the lender looks at the individual, looks at these individuals that are signing on the loan, and they're referred to as sponsors. That's how a lender refers to this. If you are the person who sourced the deal, but you're one individual who's signing on that loan, you are effectively a sponsor. You may have to bring someone else in order to complete your qualifying, and finish out your overall key principal team, but keep in mind that you are a sponsor as well. So anyone that is signing on a carve-out or signing on that lender's carve-outs are considered a sponsor. Now, a carve-out can have two different meanings, and we'll talk about both on the call, but for right now, the lender sees someone that signs on the carve-outs as someone that signs on the exceptions to the non-recourse provision. Exceptions to the non-recourse provision, meaning this is a non-recourse loan, but if you do any one of these exceptions or these items that they're going to list out as carve-outs, they can come after you personally. And it's important to note, because some of the things on there are criminal and, we would never do that. Some of them you may inadvertently do. A voluntary bankruptcy filing to protect yourself against that lender coming after you may trigger a personal guarantee, may trigger a carve-out. First payment default may trigger a carve-out. And then you've got your activity that we clearly is not in the best interest of the asset, like dumping toxic waste, creating an environmental hazard, embezzling money, stealing rents, things of that nature, that they can come after you personally. Intentionally causing harm to the lender or the investment. Those are clearly exceptions to that non-recourse rule. Now, another use of the term carve-out is the ownership percentage that you maintain for your management company or for your managers, the asset. So you've got the money that you're selling off to raise equity, or the percentage that you're selling off to raise equity, but you've also carved out a piece for yourself. And why that's important is because some common questions that I get are what percentage does somebody typically get for sponsorship? What percentage of the carve-out or the total deal am I going to have to give up to bring a sponsor in? And that can really, really vary depending on the deal and how large the carve-out is. If you're only taking 25% carve-out, you may have to give a higher percentage of that carve-out up. If you've got a 40% or 45% carve-out, maybe you don't have to give as much up. So sponsorship compensation is another factor there when you're referencing carve-outs. So that's kind of a general overview, just to sort of get the juices flowing. I don't know if there's any questions that are coming in yet, but operator, I'd love to open it up and see if anybody has any questions they'd like to hit me up with.
Sure. We actually have one question. Our first question comes from Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Eric. It's Mark Dupuy calling from Ottawa.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing real well, thanks.
Excellent. First thing I want to talk to you about is I never got your email the other day. Remember we spoke on the phone about that deal up in Louisville? And you were going to send me an email saying I never got it. So I don't know if you have my email address wrong or...
I may. We'll pick it up after the call.
Okay. So my question is regarding the non-recourse and all that. I've got a deal right now that I'm looking at, another deal in Louisville. It's 231 units, and the owners are already starting to talk about the debt service on, you know, kind of wondering who's going to come and buy this thing. And they're saying that they're not at the threshold that it needs to be to be a non-recourse loan. And they're under the impression that it's in the mid-90s, which I didn't think it was that high. So if you could clarify that for me, if you would.
Sure, sure. So your question is in regards to occupancy levels and how that would qualify. Is that correct?
Yep. They think it's okay. They think that to get non-recourse, I have to be, I can't remember what they said. I think they're into the 90s, or like 95% or something like that. And I didn't think it was that high. And so that's the first part of my question. The second part is, let's suppose it's under what...
You cut out there. Let's suppose it's under what? Hey, Mark, I think we lost you. Maybe you lost me. I certainly hope not.
No, actually, his line's still...
Okay.
Mark, are you back?
I can hear you guys now. Did I get...
Okay, great.
Sorry.
I can hear you now, though.
Okay, perfect.
So I lost you at the one part was the 90% threshold. So the second part of your I'll answer that, and then please make sure you follow up with that second question afterwards. As far as the occupancy goes, your small balance lenders range from $1 million to $5 million with Fannie Mae, or say $1 million to $6 million nationally with Freddie Mac, and they go up to 7.5 in certain markets. That's really your lower level of non-recourse debt on multifamily properties. Those two programs do require physical occupancy of 90% for the trailing 3 months. Now, if your loan request is above that, then your occupancy requirements are lower. You know, we at a minimum, we need to see 80% occupancy. In most cases, the physical occupancy should be in the mid-80s, because you're going to have some credit loss and you're going to have an economic occupancy that's going to put you below 80. If your economic occupancy is below 80%, then there's a real good chance we're going to have a tough time going perm with it, meaning getting that permanent loan done. So that 90% threshold is relative to loans between 1 and 6 million. And like I said, maybe 7.5 in some major markets. Obviously, Louisville is going to be 6 million unless we can get an exception. They would want to see.
So let's say that's kind of where I'm falling in that 1 to $6 million range, and I need to be at 90, and I'm not quite there. Will they still do something probably at a higher rate? And then once we hit the 90 for 3 months and are stabilized, can I change to a non-recourse at that point? And will the rates change as well? Or
it's going to be a different loan. It'd still be a non-recourse loan. So, I mean, non-recourse is just a characteristic of loans in general, kind of like interest only. So what you would do if the property does not present 90% occupancy for the last 3 months, then we would either season the property, wait for it to hit that 90, or if you want to buy it now, we would do what's called a bridge loan, or a short-term loan that is interest only, and it is usually non-recourse. And then once you stabilize the property, we would refinance that debt into a perm loan or into that,
gotcha,
Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae program we talked about.
Okay, I got it.
And it's reasonably priced. You know, they're certainly reasonably priced. They're interest only. They're built for just short term and a short term timeline. They're not built for long term hold.
Long term, yeah. Okay, I got it. Perfect. Thanks. I sent you a Facebook request just so you'd have my contact info. If you respond to that, I can give you my email address so you can send me those questions.
Yeah, Facebook. I'll have to go check that out on Facebook. Usually, I don't even look that. I rarely even check the
Facebook
account. Yeah, I usually just use my email as far as business communications goes. So I'll make sure to double check that email. My apologies. I know you spelled it for me. I know you spelled your last name for me, but the French spelling, I may have messed up on that French spelling. So my apologies there.
No worries. What's your email address? Maybe I'll try sending you one to get mine.
It's my first initial, E, and then my last name.
Yeah.
So it's STEWART at AtlanticBusinessCapital.com.
You didn't get to the ABC yet, eh?
Oh, it was taken. Somebody took ABC.
Oh, did they?
Well, it's
okay.
Big media company,
email,
I guess.
Right? Yeah. I'll send you an email right now and you'll get my contact.
Perfect. Perfect. I appreciate
right. Thanks,
that.
Thanks, Eric. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Up next, we have Nelson. Nelson, please go ahead.
Hey, Eric. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Eric,
How are you?
I am doing just fine, and you?
Doing real well, thanks.
All righty. Hey, Eric, I know you spoke about this briefly, and, you know, this is a question that I always have, and I'm sure other people have. Can you go into this just a bit quick, kind of the difference between the portfolio, CMBS, the difference between those two, and also the difference between Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac? And that's about it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you're talking general loan programs and when you would use either one, or are you referencing sponsorship specifically?
Loan programs, because then that'll kind of lead into the sponsorship, like the difference between, you know, what's a portfolio loan, what's a CMBS loan, the difference in sponsorship, and then. Like you just right now, you just mentioned the bridge loan. When is it used? Mezzanine. When is it used? And then how we roll into like the permanent financing. So the bridge loan would be used if a property is unstabilized or not stabilized, and then we go into the permanent. But then if we could go into also, if you could talk a bit about portfolio and CMBS. And then, by the way, since you mentioned bridge, also sponsorship requirements for a bridge loans for a property that's not stabilized. So is that clear, or is it as clear as mud now?
It's clear, and it's not a problem. I'm happy to do all of it as quickly as I can. I think we probably have about three more phone calls to touch on all those completely.
Thank you.
But yeah. I definitely want to catch up. I'll start with the first part of the question, CMBS loans relative to portfolio loans. And I think one of the defining characteristics between those two is, you know, your CMBS loans, your commercial mortgage backed securities, are just that. They are sold off in the secondary market as investment vehicles. So that risk is essentially spread out, right, through the different investment groups that buy that pool of debt. So you're not capped on the amount that you can borrow as a sponsor. Let's say you're worth X amount of dollars. You're not capped on how much you can borrow. You may even be able to qualify for multiple loans at the same time based on that net worth. when you're dealing with these securitized loans. When you're dealing with a portfolio lender, they are essentially bearing that risk or that exposure, so to speak, to you as a borrower. And most of these portfolio loans are recourse. So that's where that conversationally, that $7 million net worth that we're talking about may be restrictive towards you, or may restrict you, that, you know, your income, because the majority of those loans are recourse, they're going to look at your income, and that may restrict you. So the overall exposure to the guarantor is one of the defining characteristics of these portfolio lender relative to a CMBS lender. In most cases, you're going to see longer amortizations. You know, CMBS lenders are certainly 30 years on multifamily, where your portfolio lenders, they usually won't take you out that long. They're usually going to want to go 25 years max, even on multifamily properties. And they really don't like to fix your interest rate as long as your CMBS lenders do. Your conduits are typically going to give you a 5 or a 10 year fix. You know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac will do, they've got options from, you know, a 1 month adjustable all the way up to a 30 year fixed. So that can really vary. They're going to be good to you on that front. Your portfolio lenders, they might give you a 10 year term, but they're probably going to want to reset that rate at the 5 year mark at least. So you typically see shorter fixed periods, shorter amortizations, but in most cases, their third-party expenses are lower, and you know, the leverage is usually about the same. 75% to 80% is pretty common with both guys. So those are some common characteristics there. Fannie and Freddie, they're a little bit more uniform. And their certainty of execution is a little bit greater than the CMBS market is. The double-edged sword is their loan docs are a little less negotiable. But that certainty of execution that they provide has some real value to it. 30-year amortization is standard. Interest-only periods of anywhere from 1 to 3 years are pretty much standard in the industry right now. And leverage, like I said, leverage from 75% to 80% is quite common. So those are some high level views.
And just right quick, I know we're kind of running up against a time crunch. When you said interest only 1 to 3 years standard, what? So that converts after 1 to 3 years to an interest only loan?
Actually, it's the opposite. In a lot of these permanent lenders, and this is referring to a perm loan, a lot of times they will offer the first year or first 3 years, they'll offer you just interest payments. They won't require that you pay the principal down in your payment. So it can really open up your net cash flow. You can either make improvements to the property, and or you can, you know, pay that money back to your investors, whatever that is best for the investment. But that can really help when you're just getting started into the investment. You're just getting the property off the ground. So at lower leverage, if you come in at lower leverage, like let's say it's an 80% market, but your debt service constrained at 75, they're getting more and more aggressive on that interest only as well. You know, you can see 4 to 5 years IO. Freddie Mac, actually, if you took a 65% loan to value on their small balance program, they can offer you full term interest only.
Okay.
So there's a lot of options out there in that for loan structure right now.
Alrighty. Okay. Well, Eric, thank you.
My pleasure, Nelson. My pleasure. Hope everything's going well. Matter of fact, I just had a 305. I just had a 305 number call in, so.
Okay. You're back into Miami pool now.
That's right. That's right. Dade Brower. Was there any more questions, operator?
Yes. Up next we have Joe. Joe, please go ahead.
Hi, Eric. It's Joe from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Spoke to you at UP9. How are you, Guy?
Doing well, thanks. How are you, Joe?
I'm fine, thank you. Listen, I just put an LOI in on a 30-unit complex in Philadelphia, and I used the numbers. I wanted to see if my numbers were in line. Excuse me. I used 20% down with a 4.75 interest rate on 30-year term. Are my numbers in line?
I think they are. In a market of Philly is going to be certainly an 80% market with both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. 4.75 right now with the interest rates that we're seeing and the type of incentives that Freddie Mac is offering and Fannie Mae as well, you're probably going to come just inside of that if we were to lock rates today. I'm putting quotes out there right now at 4.3, 4.4 to 4.6. And it really depends on what type of incentives the properties are going to qualify for. But that specific property very well may be considered uncapped, which is going to get, meaning it's not going to fall under the funds that Fannie or Freddie has allocated every year. So they can fund as much uncapped business as they want. And they incentivize you for doing that. So they'll give you about a 10 basis point reduction in your interest rate. They also have some...
What does that mean, Eric, uncapped?
Uncapped means that loan can... That loan does not fall into their allocated funds or the money that they are allocated by the government. It's basically unrestricted funds, meaning they can fund as much of that as they want to.
Okay.
So they'll go and they'll ask for more money every year, you know, because they want to do more loans, right? And a lot of times they won't get it. So they'll say, no, we're not going to raise your allocation, but we'll be a little bit more lenient on deals that fall outside of your allocated funds or your uncapped business. And
okay.
they'll incentivize borrowers to send in these uncapped deals because they want to. That's free money to them. They want to fund as much of that as they can.
Okay, and what's kind of the timeline on something, a loan of this? The property purchase amount somewhere in the area, $1.5 million. So what's the timeline on closing on something like this?
Realistically, you're going to come in between 45 and 60 days. You know, that 50 to 53-day mark is kind of the normal sweet spot. They're going to do all your third parties in 2 to 3 weeks. It's going to take them a couple weeks to get those ramped up, and then they're probably going to close, you know, a week or two after they come in.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to check with you to see if 4.75 is a safe number to work with, and I appreciate that, Eric.
I believe it's a safe number to work with. I think we can come inside of that. Quite confident on the 20% down. 30-year AM is certainly the case. If you chose a 10-year term, we should be able to do the first 3 years of just interest-only payments, which just playing with the numbers, figure IO for the first 3 years and look what that does to your investor returns. I think it's going to make you smile.
Yeah. Yeah, and I always go back and forth between the 20% down and 25% down because it really throws your numbers for a loop using 25 instead of 20.
Yeah, that's the acquisition cost has a huge impact on your returns, no doubt.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Eric. Great info. Thank you.
Good thing. Thanks, Joe.
Okay, up next we have Wesley. Wesley, please go ahead.
Yes, I was calling because, you know, I've gotten involved with Dave last few months, and I'm out there looking for deals like everybody else. And I wanted some more clarification if I could get for the sponsorship. What would you repeat again or tell me again about where it is that they require my personal guarantee and when it's not? I got a little confused about whether it would be better to look for a smaller property or whether I ought to go for the big property, because then it's so big that they're going to forgive me for not having $15 million in personal assets.
Well, in Dave's program, I think you're only forgiven for not having $15 million in personal assets for so long. They want to see you work and attain that as quickly as possible. So I know that they push everybody to
do that.
And they would like you to. So I think they're only going to forgive you for so long. the non-recourse program that you're starting, that you're talking about, it's more of an industry standard, and it's found at a loan amount of approximately $1 million. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac both offer non-recourse financing for multifamily properties or five or more units, and they'll both go down to $1 million as far as the loan amount goes. Now, I know, you know, there's always exceptions. Fannie Mae will do a little bit lower, you know, for a relationship. But in general, it's about $1 million floor on that non-recourse structure. So, you know, just backing into your numbers, you really want to buy properties that are above, say, 1.3, 1.4 million. You know, just put $1.5 million there as a reasonable purchase price benchmark.
Well, I find those easy. I mean, I keep getting all these things about 215 units and 175 units and all this stuff, and so they're above that level.
Well, I mean, and that's more about your strategy of investing than it is, you know, than it is the other factors. If you're looking to bring in a partner in the deal that's done it before,
right.
You know, there's a lot of folks out there that source the larger deals. And again, it's all relative. I don't know what you consider larger. You know, $1.5 million is not a big deal to certain groups, and you know, other groups that could be on the high side of their portfolio. So it's all relative to what you're looking for. But if you are looking for that non-recourse financing, looking to bring in some partners and kind of round out your ownership team, then that's where you would want to stay, is north of that 1.5.
Okay. So just don't look real small. Look 1.5 and higher.
Really, I think that's probably what's going to be best suited. If you go below that, you know, and your loan amount comes in at that 750 mark or 600, you know, your best financing is probably going to be with your depository lenders, your Chase Bank or U.S. Bank or TD Bank or whoever it is. They're going to give you, you know, real nice terms, but they're also going to look at tax return, your personal tax returns. They're going to, you know, underwrite to your income and that type of thing. So it's just a different underwriting. And most of your partners that we're talking about bringing in, we'll refer to them as sponsors, obviously.
Right, right.
They're not looking to personally sign on a deal that somebody else brought to them that they didn't source themselves, they don't have, you know, intimate knowledge of. In most cases, they don't want to sign a personal guarantee and go through that underwrite.
Right.
That's not every case, but the majority of your sponsors that you're going to meet don't want to put a personal guarantee on something.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Did that answer the question, or was there more to it?
Well, no. The only thing was I probably misunderstood. I thought you were saying that on the smaller properties you would wind up, and which you are, you're saying that on the smaller properties, and this is the low, the 800s, the 900,000s, you've got to probably put up a personal guarantee, so get above that. But I thought you were saying that they would still be looking at your personal assets and value and wouldn't loan unless it got larger. And then as it gets larger, it gets easier. And, of course, like everybody else, we're finding this market is very hot, and everybody's looking, and it's really hard to hit the Holy Trinity. And so we have to.
Well, you know what you're saying is true, though. I mean, they do look at your net worth. They do look at your liquidity and experience, even on the larger deals.
Yep. So
and
I'm a newbie.
You're absolutely right about hot markets. I mean, it's definitely multifamily is definitely a popular sector right now. But one thing I did allude to is that when you get into the $15 and $20 million deals, then they do back off of that net worth equal to the loan amount type of rule of thumb. So you're correct there as well. Not everybody walks around with a $20 million net worth. So you know, they don't necessarily stick to those guidelines in lockstep as they do on the small balance deals.
All right, sir. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thanks, Wesley.
Thank you.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
All right, great. Well, I think that's probably touching on time here. We're creeping up on 50 minutes, close to an hour. So,
so Eric, I do have a couple of questions for the students emailed in, so I was wondering if you can answer them real quick before you go.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay, so I have one from Mike Krakowski. He writes, "Hello, Eric. Could you just let us know, is there any way to work around the flat roof issue with lenders?"
Yes. Flat roofs are very, very case by case. It's a common thought process that, you know, flat roofs are not going to get financed by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they actually will finance flat roofs. It's just a function of assessing the condition, checking for leaks, making sure that they're healthy. So what you want to do is look at when they were replaced, how old the roof is, if there's any, you know, water intrusion anywhere, and then raise your replacement reserve number by $25 to $50, because that's what a lender is most likely going to do. It also depends on the area that it's located. I mean, a flat roof in Phoenix is not going to have the same water issues and moisture issues that a flat roof in Houma, Louisiana is going to have. So, you know, keep that in mind as well. But yes, don't get rid of a deal just because it has flat roofs. We can certainly get those done. We can definitely get those done.
Cool. And I do have another one from Martin Baltazar. He writes, it's kind of long, so forgive me. He writes, "Hi, Eric. This is Martin Baltazar and Vanessa Olivius from San Diego, California. It was a pleasure meeting you at the boot camp back in June. We want to be close to accurate as possible when underwriting deals. So for a 50 to 175 unit, stabilized C to B properties in B areas producing a debt coverage ratio of 1.6 at $5 to $9 million. We are currently carrying a 4.8% interest rate, 20 to 25% down, interest only for the first 2 to 3 years. Could you tell us what rates you've been seeing as of late and what you feel should be carrying, what you feel we should be carrying in our underwriting?" And I know you just answered that, but if you could just answer it again, that'd be great.
Sure. No. And I think it's important to note that the $9 million deal is going to be a different program than that $5 million deal, because you're toggling between the small balance programs and, you know, your general DUS program or Freddie conventional program. So that's where your interest only is definitely something to watch. I would ask that you only dial in, just kind of to be conservative on the underwriting approach, or on your underwriting approach, only dial in a year's worth of interest only. Once we get into the deal and look at the individual merits of it, talk through your hold period and your investment strategy, then we may be able to negotiate additional interest only. But keep in mind, Fannie Mae is only delegated, or Fannie Mae lenders are only delegated to offer you the first year or 1 year of IO. Beyond that, it's going to be an exception. They have to go in and ask for a waiver. Freddie Mac will do, you know, anywhere from 2 years to 3 years if you take a 7 or a 10 year term. It depends on the market itself. So there's some variables there as to whether we're going to get that IO in the first couple years. So I wouldn't underwrite more than 1 year of interest only. And that can really impact your returns. That can really make a difference. The second thing is I think a 4.8% rate is a healthy rate for your underwriting. We can most likely come inside of that. With treasuries where they are right now, they're just below 2.2% on the 10-year yield. That is a reasonable rate. Will probably come in lower, but just keep in mind, don't throw the deal away if it's not working. You, at a 1.6 debt cover, you've got a lot of room for your lender. So if it's working for your investors, your lender's only going to need a 1.25 to a 1.3 cover. So if you've got a 1.6, you're in a real healthy position. So I believe that that touches on a couple of the variables you were looking for. If there's, certainly give me a ring and we can kind of go over the investment strategy and talk a little deeper when we get into your specific market and that type of thing. But as an overview, those are the two items that I'd focus on. So hopefully I answered the question there.
Well, he'll probably give you a call, Eric. Operator, are there any more questions? Anybody waiting?
There are no further questions at the moment. No questions.
Okay. Well, Eric, can you just let us know the easiest way to reach you? Because I'm sure there are a ton of students who are out there and want to be able to contact you. So what is the easiest and quickest way to reach you?
Sure, absolutely. An email is fine. So first initial and last name. So it's estewart@atlanticbusinesscapital.com. And you feel free to call me at 800-916-9005. I'm on the phone all day, so feel free to just lob a call in, leave a message, or shoot me an email, and we can set up a call and do an initial consultation. But I appreciate you guys having me on the line. It's kind of you to do that.
We appreciate you coming. Anytime, and Eric's right, if you have a question when it comes to anything as far as financing, sponsorship, he's the best person that you can call besides Jeannie. definitely give him a call, and he'll definitely be happy to answer your questions, all right? So it was a pleasure having you on today, Eric. We really appreciate it, and we'll definitely be getting in touch with you and having you on again.
Sounds great. I look forward to it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot, Eric. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.